Hi, it's Tony. On today's show, we'll talk with Mitch Albom about his latest book, The Little Liar, and we'll find out if Chessie ate the Thanksgiving turkey. If she did, she didn't eat it in our house because she was at Sam's house. But first, as we know, kids, commerce.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
You're going to take Virginia.
Yes.
Virginia plus 2.5. Okay.
That's right. And then you're not going to like this at all. But the Commodes travel to Dallas.
Yeah.
And they get an 11, and I'd take them in the 11.
You're going to take them? They're terrible.
You don't get 11 points if you're any good.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Not even close. Not even close on 10.5 or 11 or 12. Not even close.
Second half, really.
Not even close.
Bootsy was giving us the updates on the star team.
Just so terrible. So terrible. All right, let me open. Well, I'll talk a little bit about Thanksgiving, and I will talk a little bit about the reaction to what I did the other day about the assassination of John Kennedy. I did get some texts about that. I mean, people of a certain age remember exactly where they were, but this is different. This is from Ellen Evans, and she writes, and she wrote this a couple of days ago. Today is Friday, November 24th, and I'm in Rehoboth with our extended family celebrating Thanksgiving. I was up early, went out for a walk. After seeing a glorious sunrise on the beach, I got coffee from Rise Up, that's a coffee joint on Rehoboth Avenue, and was briskly walking, fully in my thoughts, and I approached a sneaky tall man walking towards me. We smiled at each other, said good morning. Right after I passed him, it hit me. I turned my head over my shoulder and slightly louder than a stage whisper said, "Ooh, la cheeserie." And now my life is complete. I chose not to disrupt your morning reverie, but if I'd gone all fangirl, I would have told you how much joy you've brought to my family and me for close to 30 years. Thanks for inadvertently making an already beautiful day even better. That's thank you to Ellen. Yes, I was out there for a couple of days with Michael and Liz and the boys and... the weather out there was very cooperative, right? I mean, in the sense that it didn't snow.
Every day
snow
had beautiful
or rain.
Moments, but it also reminded you you're officially at the end of fall and it's beginning to feel like winter.
Yeah, it's,
and
it's
out there you have a brisk wind.
It gets windy.
Yeah,
you know, particularly on that golf course, it gets really windy. So I just
Rise Up is right by the little roundabout as you're heading into town.
Yeah, yeah. From Jerry Wagoner.
Is it better than the Russian coffee at Dunkin' Donuts?
I was going to get to that. Highlight of my trip was I took the three boys. I took a picture of all five of us at the Dunkin' Donuts, where in fact they did serve us. They had coffee
and
they had donuts.
It was shocking. They had donuts.
Brilliant.
I wish there was something clever and funny to say about the situation, but a close friend of mine finds himself in the same predicament you were in several months ago, and he's looking for guidance. Tidewater, the water supplier for our community, Kinsale Glen. I know exactly where that is. That's Cross Route 1. Not far from Rehoboth Country Club, has charged him $7,741 for his last quarter's water usage. Hmm. His normal quarterly bill is about $135. It's just the same as me. Like your story I heard on your podcast, Tidewater is not willing to budge. They say they have tested the meter and everything looks good on their end. Therefore, the bills must be correct, and they are not willing to adjust and are threatening fees and penalties for non-payment. My friend helped me with a home repair yesterday. I told him of your saga, and I offered to reach out to you and see how you resolved the situation. How I resolved it? I paid it. It never came back to me. Now, mine was about $1,100 or $1,200, not $7,700.
That's...
But, I mean, my advice would be you get a lawyer.
Yes. Get a lawyer.
Get a lawyer, because that's not going to cost you $7,000. You'd get a lawyer for a grand.
Yeah.
And then beat this thing down. Come on. A reply by email with any advice or suggestions would be greatly appreciated. There's no email.
No, we just got it.
It's just ridiculous. You present the bill and you say, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
You don't have a single house in Kinsale Glen that has anywhere near this. Why do you think we have it? And if we had it, why didn't you alert us?
Yeah.
When it was spiking up for a week in a row, why didn't you alert us? I mean, this is all of my points. And they told me to, you know, pound sand. By the way, just to drop a name, one of my golf and poker buddies, Al Serafino, enjoyed your shout out on BTI earlier this year. That's so wonderful. We got some mail on the Kennedy story. Mark Schaefer wrote, thank you for sharing your recollections and reflections on November 22nd, 1963. I agree with you that every generation has its I remember where I was moment. For me and a lot of people my age, it was a Challenger explosion. And I said that my senior year in high school. But I think Kennedy assassination was something much more than one of those moments. It ended an entire age. When I was in seminary, my church history professor was talking about the different eras in human history and the ways that each looked to a different source of truth. The medieval era looked to divine revelation, and the modern era looked to reason. And then he said something shocking. The modern era ended in Europe in 1917, when World War I smashed any 19th century hopes of unlimited progress due to science and reason. But the modern era didn't end in America until the Kennedy assassination. I buy that. Prior to that moment, the U.S. had remained largely immune from the chaos of two world wars and still believed in unlimited progress towards a brighter future, much of that having to do with our geography. And we're a long way away from all of those things that were happening in the rest of the world. The Kennedy assassination was not just the end of innocence. It began a process of postmodern skepticism that has only grown. Since that time, we have seen a steady erosion in trust in public institutions, authorities, and even most tragically, observable fact. It's a good point, Mark. It's no coincidence that the granddaddy of all conspiracy theories is the JFK assassination conspiracy theory. So you're not wrong at all in thinking that of all the tragedies in American public life, Pearl Harbor, the Challenger, 9/11, the Kennedy assassination looms largest. All of this is to say I appreciate your first-person reflection on that day. You were witness to history in more ways than you realize. From Shad, straight, no chaser. Thanks for sharing. From Kenneth Klein, longtime listener. I, like you, was a New York City schoolboy and heard of the Kennedy assassination in high school, just like you. Little did I know that 15 years later, after trying murder cases in the Manhattan District of the Attorney's Office, I'd be hired by the U.S. House of Representatives to be the Assistant Deputy Chief Counsel of the House of Representatives Select Investigating Committee of Committee investigating the Kennedy assassination. One little known conclusion drawn by our committee based upon a scientific examination by audio experts of a tape of the shots fired that day and set forth in the committee's final report was that the evidence showed there were bullets fired not by one but by two shooters. One firing from above and behind the president and a second firing from the grassy knoll. Amazing that the U.S. Congressional Committee reached that conclusion in its final report in 1980, and so few people are aware of that fact. And I add parenthetically, I was not aware of that fact. And that changes
everything.
Changes everything. Next year on November 22nd, you can casually mention the second shooter in a Amaze Your Friends, Ken Klein, Santa Clarita or Clarita, California. Wow.
That does change.
From
change
Steve, the sycophant. Many thanks for your comments on the assassination of John Kennedy. You said what I've often tried to say about that day, a defining one for me, too. I was a senior at the University of Nebraska, and on that Thursday, the whole campus was in an uproar over the upcoming Saturday game between Nebraska and Oklahoma for the Big 8 championship and an Orange Bowl bid. Then the world turned upside down. I remember watching Walter Cronkite on CBS Live confirming Kennedy's death. That's when I really believed it. Most college games were canceled or delayed, but NU and Oklahoma played. One factor that helped tip the scales was Oklahoma coach Bud Wilkinson, a friend of the Kennedy family, talking with someone in Bobby Kennedy's entourage and getting the go-ahead. Should the game have been played? Now I think no. Then it was yes. I remember being in Vietnam 4 years later and thinking, would JFK have been able to keep us out of this mess? Another what-if with no answer. As you noted, for my parents it was Pearl Harbor, for my sons 9/11, and for later generations, whatever the next disaster is. Let's just hope nukes won't be involved. Steve the sycophant. Kevin Bench, The Hills in Texas. I'm 71 years old, and I think November 22nd, 1963 is the most memorable and significant day of my life. Thank you for saying it. Bob Davis, Wake Forest. 10th grade biology class, North Penn High School. If you're old like me and Tony, you can remember exactly where you were 60 years ago, November 22nd, 1963, the day that changed the course of America forever. And then days of just watching events on black and white television. Look it up, people. Yeah, so thank you for the response to that. Sad that it had to go on, but it's, you know, thank you for the response. I hope everybody had a nice Thanksgiving. We had a lovely Thanksgiving out at the beach with the three boys. Tough I say to Michael, tough to be a parent of three boys.
Those Kornheiser boys.
6'4" and 1"
Puts it in perspective, right, Dad?
Yeah. One of them, the baby.
Fearless.
You have to worry about the baby running around a house he's unfamiliar with that he'll fall and crack his skull open on any number of things.
Yes.
So you got to watch the baby all the time. And the other two are fighting.
You know? Turn your head, they're fighting on the ground.
Just bickering, wrestling.
No, wrestling.
Yeah. So.
And you're like, where'd you learn these moves?
Yeah. We had lovely food, though. We got food from Jerry, the chef at Rehoboth Beach Country Club, a lovely, lovely turkey breast with, I thought, delicious and sweet stuffing ladled with mangoes and cranberries and a great...
Apricots.
Apricots, right. Well, Carol said it was mangoes when she ate some of it.
Oh,
okay.
Apricots.
Whatever. And it was really, really good, and a fabulous apple pie, the best apple pie I've ever had.
A beautiful pie.
Oh, it was great. And then I also got a meal from Roberto Donna, the traditional Italian Thanksgiving beef and tortellini.
We have to rewind on this one. So this Thanksgiving is months in the making. We're not going back to, you know, did I defrost the turkey properly from years ago? And we're at that point where we cook dinner most nights at our house, and we're always happy to have family. And our boys were very lucky. They got to see both sets of grandparents at some point over Thanksgiving week. So we had a lot of reminders for all of our blessings. But we decided we're going to be out at the beach. We don't really want to spend all day cooking. There's other things we want to do. And Rehoboth offers, like, as many clubs and restaurants, the ability to do takeout. So we picked the turkey breast dinner because kids don't eat that much, but it still gives you the traditional, you know, the stuffing on the side, your gravies. We thought we were going to get some potatoes. And it was a very rich gravy. It was awesome.
So
then we decide this. We put the order, and Dad just throws a curveball. Roberta Dona's doing some takeout. How many meals do you want to get? And I go, I don't want any. We already have dinner taken care of. Yeah. So you picked up Roberta Dona dinner, got delivered
Darryl
to your
Clark,
house.
Yeah, Darryl,
you then drove it out to another state. You drove it to Delaware to then not
through
have on
states,
Thanksgiving.
Actually. Yeah, yeah.
To have the day after Thanksgiving.
Great.
It's good planning.
You had no intention of heating, reheating, preparing any of the dishes that we had. So I had to clean out your oven, and you just sat there.
That's what Dad's
reminding me that reminding me that the soup I warmed up for you was not hot enough.
That soup was great.
That was fantastic.
That was done at Rehoboth, cream of crab soup.
Yes.
That was fantastic.
Rich. Mm. You can only have a mug full of it, but fantastic.
So I'll say this one thing, because everybody knows I hate pumpkin, although I'm not sure I've ever eaten pumpkin. But I'm sure I would hate it if I ate it. I don't eat pumpkin pie.
And all the associated pumpkin spice things.
No, none of that junk.
Yes.
Yeah, none of
it's
that
not a
is,
real flavor.
You know,
it's really
right.
not.
So let me just say this. Roberto Dona made a pumpkin tiramisu.
Mm.
And you had a bite of it.
Yes.
And Liz had a bite of it. And I asked you, is it pumpkin-y? And you both said it's more chocolatey coffee. It's more like chocolate and coffee. So I ate it. I ate half of it.
And
it had a certain tang that maybe was pumpkin. I don't know because I don't eat pumpkin, so I don't know. It's fabulous. I still have some of it. It is fabulous.
I was thinking of you because there was a great meme that I was watching on Instagram about all food safety rules go out the window for Thanksgiving. Sure,
oh, yeah.
I see a turkey that's been on the counter for 5 hours. Why not? This is you driving food back and forth, wrapping up leftovers, leaving them out.
Yeah.
If I
die from the turkey, I'm good. You know, so...
We got two turkey breasts. You're still rocking the second one in the fridge.
Yes, it's still there. Most of it is there.
As long as you don't carry the meat in your pocket.
I'm going to eat it for the next 3 days.
Get the Heinz gravy.
The reason... I still have some of the Rehoboth gravy, which works great, obviously. The reason that Thanksgiving is the best holiday, in my opinion, the best holiday, is because it is a secular holiday that has nothing to do with death. Okay? It's not Memorial Day. It's not July 4th, where it was a revolution and there was death. It's not that. And it's totally secular. And it's about food. It's about food.
Yeah.
And it's the best.
Food and football.
Yeah. It's just the best. We were able to watch the game.
So as we were preparing some of this food for you, it just made me happy that the Bootster is now old enough where he could sit on the... He's graduated to where he's allowed to sit on the couch with you. You guys slowly got closer and closer together as you tried to explain what was happening at the Commanders game.
Yeah.
And he loves all the numbers. He loves trying to figure it out. He's now calling for penalties. He has no idea what's going on. But to see that image from behind made me very happy.
I had a lovely time.
Now, I think you're afraid of the hammer.
I have... yes.
He's a volatile 4.5-year-old.
Yes, he is. He's a wild man. I have... You know, just a profound appreciation of how much harder it is to raise three boys 6-4-1 at this point than anything I ever did in my life. I had two children and I was never home.
Well, this is why everyone makes that joke when you go from, you know, when you go to man, from man to man to zone with the third.
Yeah.
And the reality is at the end of the day, you just feel like you have tried your hardest to get a meaningful, you know, interactions with each boy, but that you also feel like you've let somebody down.
Well, it's just, you know, what did I say? I called somebody and I said, they would never ask me to babysit.
Well, now you understand.
And I would never be able to do it, so don't ask
me. But again, you'd pull out the cash.
That's right.
All right, we'll take care of this.
I'd hire somebody. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we're supposed to have Michael Wilbon with us, yes?
No, Mitch Albom.
Oh, is Mitch going to be first?
Well, Mitch first.
Okay, then down the road, I'll explain what happened to Wilbon. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show. I'm so
worn out. This is a man named Tom Golly. This is a song called Making Moves, and he writes, my name is Tom. I'm Cat Stewart's manager, longtime PTI and Kornheiser fan myself. It was awesome you chose to play Cat's songs on the show a little while ago. It was an honor and a blessing for our team. It's always special when you want to help independent artists. I'm also an artist. I have some songs that if you're interested in playing for your show, it'd be amazing to hear them. Especially as intros for segments like you always use them. I give full permission. This is called Making Moves. It plays in my dear friend, one of the great musicians of all time. I'm not even going to talk about his writing, just as a great musician of all time. Mitch Albom, who has a new book. And I have the book in my hand, and the book is called The Little Liar. And before we start talking to Mitch about that, I did something with Mitch's book that I do with friends of mine who write books and send me books. I put these things on the PTI set. I put them so as you look at me, it would pretty much be to my right-hand side, near my right shoulder. And I put them out there for 2-3 days and just wonder if anything happens. You heard about this, did you not?
I didn't hear about it. I got sent screenshots from around the country. Look what's next to Kornheiser's ear. Like, there's a sentence you don't expect very often.
Right.
And there was my book. So thank you for making the shelf. I appreciate it.
It always gives me a wonderful feeling to do small little things like that with either pictures of people or books they've written. You know what I mean? Because yeah. I do know that there's a market out there for people who look to see, well, how did he change the show this week? Because we always have different paintings up or photographs or stuff like that. So yeah, so I'm happy that you got that reaction from people. I should ask you, the book is called The Little Liar, and I will get to my own confession in a little while, but when did you write it and what caused you to write it, and please talk about it?
All right, so I started writing a couple years ago. I had the idea 10 years ago. I always wanted to write a book about truth and lying and the consequences of it. And I finally found a story that I thought would do that, that was kind of inspired by true events. It's a fictional story, but real things kind of happen. And it basically follows a little boy in Greece who never told a lie in his life until he was 11 years old, and the Nazis invaded his village, and they found out about his honesty, and they decided to use it, and they kidnapped him, and they said, listen, you can go back to your family. All you have to do is stand on these train tracks for a couple of weeks and tell the people who are getting on where they're going. Tell them they're going to good jobs and good homes, and they're all going to be together, and then you can go back to your family. So he does this because he's trusting, and he thinks he's telling the truth, and people trust him because he's never lied. And on the last day, on the last train, he sees his own family being shoved into a boxcar, and he finds out that these trains are actually going off to concentration camps, and he's not allowed to go. And it follows the consequence of this one lie over the next 40 years of his life, of his brother's life, of their girlfriend's life, and of the Nazis' life, to show the ramifications of, you know, one lie and what happens when we lose the truth. And, you know, he becomes a He becomes a pathological liar later in his life. He can't tell the truth anymore. He wanders around the world. He becomes like that guy in Catch Me If You Can, you know, who changes his identity and becomes a billionaire, but reclusive, you know, no friends, no anything, because he's lived with the guilt of this lie. And his brother and the girl try to find him throughout the course of the book, one to blame him and the other to forgive him. So it's a, you know, it's a parable about truth and lying. And I think it turns out to be an important time to get a book like that, I think.
I will now confess this. You know me very well. You know my emotional makeup. I had to stop 30 pages in. I cried on every page. I did. I mean, that's because of my particular DNA and how it affected me. But I had to stop because I was crying. Has anybody else given you that sort of reaction? Has said, this got to me more than I have ever imagined?
Yeah, usually they tend to finish the book. And then they do it.
I went to the end. Yeah. I know how it ends. It's okay.
Yeah. I mean, I do. It's only tough to read at the very beginning because it details some of the events. But it goes for 40 years. It's not as tough the rest of the way. But, yeah, people, I'm kind of used to people crying at my books. I did the Today Show a couple of weeks ago when it first came out, and I basically sat down with Hoda Kotb, and she looked at me. She started crying. I said, okay, you got to wait until we talk about something. You know, like, you're going to give me a complex here. But, you know, I guess that's a good thing if you move people with your story.
So here is the overarching question that I think if somebody was doing a large story on you, they would ask. And they would say you often deal with moral issues, with spiritual issues, with issues of right and wrong. Why do you do that?
Well, you know, I wrote Sports Until Tuesdays with Maury in 1997. And, you know, that book I wrote just to pay Maury's medical bills. And I was planning on going back to sports writing, and, you know, that would be that. And then, for whatever reason, Tuesdays with Maury took off and became this much, much larger than life thing. And pretty much everybody who stopped to talk to me didn't ask me who was going to win the Super Bowl anymore on the sports reporters. They said, my mother died of cancer, and the last thing we did was read Tuesdays with Maury. Can I talk to you about it? You know, and I suddenly got started being asked to speak at universities and at funerals and at hospice groups and things like that. And my world sort of changed in terms of, like, okay, if I'm going to invest time in a book, am I going to write about a guy, you know, playing basketball, or am I going to write about larger issues, you know? And I began to write novels about larger issues, and they fascinated me, you know, and it takes a lot of effort to read a book, as you have just illustrated. Yeah. I think, you know, people have the right to get something out of it that's going to stay with them for some time, if I can deliver that.
You believe in moral law? You believe that there's something out there that, right. I mean, because I don't think you could write the books that you've written. And not every book is this way. But I don't think you could write the books you have written with the larger themes that you are writing about if you didn't believe in it, right? It would not ring true. The thing about your books is they ring true all the time.
Well, I believe in moral law, but even more so, I believe in hope. And I've been teased for this. A critic once dismissed me by saying, he's just the king of hope, which to me is like a pretty good throne to get stuck on. And I, no matter what the circumstances, if it's the five people you meet in heaven or stranger in a lifeboat or this one, even though they present some moral dilemmas, they end with hope. And that's, you know, I live my life that way. I work with kids in Haiti, if you don't have hope down there, you can't work. So, you know, that's even a bigger theme.
I wrote down a note to say, Mitch, can't you just write a simple love story? Can't you just do that? Can't you write a Hallmark movie? Huh?
Actually, I did write a Hallmark movie once.
You did?
Yeah.
Which one?
It's called Have a Little Faith. It was on Hallmark Hall of Fame about, I don't know, 10 years ago.
That's tremendous. Yeah, but I mean, you know, like, if you
were... Yeah, I know. Like, doesn't make you think too much. Just, you know, boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl. Yeah. That's what you want. Okay,
If you were sitting at the... No, but I'm saying, if you were sitting at the piano and composing music, it would not have these themes because it's more frivolous. I mean, the music is certainly more, it's lovely, but it's more frivolous. And I just wondered, does Janine ever say to you, does anybody ever say to you, Mitch, let's just write a love story. Let's just make it happen. Love story, quick.
I don't know. I'm actually sitting at the piano right now. I could do a love story right here, you know. That'd
be Gabby here. So fabulous. You've got to sit by a piano. It's like when Springsteen does interviews, he just sits with a guitar all the time. Because
sure.
that's his safety net.
I know the music that works for you. It goes... It's all like that. It's all 1950s through 1960s, which Tony and I actually sang on stage doing like Teenager in Love and songs like that back in the Super Bowl.
At the Super Bowl, we had backup. Leslie Visser was one of our backup singers at one point. Mike Litwin was there.
Alan Greenberg
was there. Yeah, Mark Heisler was there, and everybody did this. I remember that. Well, I have a couple of pictures of that.
Yep.
Very, very lovely. Yeah, I mean, yeah. You used to do, when it was your turn to just do a solo, you, not invariably, but very often, did Rockin' Robin, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, boy, good memory, yeah.
Yeah.
Rocks in the treetops all day long.
Rocking and a bopping, singing his song. All the little birdies on Jaybird Street. Love to hear the Robin go tweet, tweet, tweet.
Yeah.
We've moved away from the little liar a little bit.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks for getting as far away from my book as is humanly possible.
No, the book is great. Come on now. The book is great. And I love you and I love the writing. I do. I have you on. I can't not ask this. You live in Detroit. You've chosen to make your life in Detroit.
Yeah.
Jim Harbaugh is 15 minutes away, probably, at the University of Michigan. What do you make of all this? And what do you make of the fact that they won all three games without him and they beat Ohio State? What do you make of that?
Well, I'm glad that they did because the kids themselves had nothing to do with any of this. And I can pretty much assure you they weren't sitting around going, oh, good, we stole their signs. Now we can be. They just do what the coaches tell them to do. And, you know, the Big Ten, I have some issues with the way that they acted, not necessarily because they should or shouldn't take action, but because it seems as a result of other coaches like Ryan Day screaming at them saying, you need to take action. And basically what they said was, we're going to balance out the season here. The reason we're taking action now is because it's quite possible that Michigan benefited unfairly in the early games of this year. So we need to balance it by giving them a disadvantage in the later games of this year. They basically said that in their report. And first of all, the early games in that year, they won like by an average of 51-7. I'm not sure that it was all sign stealing. And then the three games that they decided to punish them for were Penn State, Maryland on the road, and Ohio State. And that's way tougher than any of the other three games that they played. So if the kids had faltered or lost, of course, you know, the critics would say, well, see, they only won because they were sign stealing. But they beat Ohio State. They stared them down. I was at the game. And beat them, you know, without question. And also beat Penn State pretty handily, running the ball about 100 times in a row, and beat Maryland. So, you know, if there was any kind of advantage, that wasn't the reason that they won games. And so I was happy to see it. As far as Jim, who I've known since he was the quarterback at Michigan, I literally was the first quarterback I covered when I got here. I don't know what to make of him. He's very quixotic. He's unusual. He was since he was a kid. He swears that he didn't have any knowledge of it or whatever, and he's not like him to swear that if he knows that it's going to come back to bite him. But that doesn't mean that it was right, and they did cheat based on the rules as they're written. But now he gets to, you know, now very quickly, you know how it turns in the sports world? Like, okay, that's behind, and now let's see if he can actually win a playoff game, you know, which has been their bugaboo they've gotten to the national championship, and that's what it'll be.
So let me go from A to Z and back to A again, having established your belief in moral law, having established the larger themes in your life, and not to make sign stealing, not to equate that with anything that's in The Little Liar or Stranger in the Boat or any of those things. But why do you think Michigan accepted the punishment? This is the part I've had difficulty with. Why didn't they say no? No, stop. This is ridiculous. We want our day in court, and you're not the court. Why did they accept the punishment?
Well, apparently, you know, they did that at the same time that they fired a linebackers coach.
Yes.
And I think what happened was the Big Ten or whoever was making this case presented some evidence that would have been embarrassing to the program. And the fact that they fired a linebackers coach, who they claimed was trying to cover it up, I think they felt like, okay, if we go to court, more stuff's going to come out than we want, and it's going to stay in the university more. Let's just take this punishment and be over with. And, you know, they probably were advised that they weren't going to win. That's why it's usually why people don't, you know, to accept their penalties and don't go to court. Does that mean that they had something on Harbaugh? Not necessarily. It means they had something that was embarrassing to the university if it became public, and I imagine that's why they decided not to do it.
So if you were writing about this, if you were doing, you know, a book, a novel about right and wrong with Michigan, right and wrong, they broke a rule. The rule is a stupid rule. It's the dumbest rule I've ever heard of. No advanced scouting in the Big Ten. Every pro team in every pro sport builds its life on advanced scouting. I don't even understand it. And you can't tell me it's about money, because the Big Ten Network furnishes so much money to all of these schools. It's just a ludicrously dumb rule. But the rule was indeed, nobody quibbles that the rule was broken. Not right. necessarily that they stole the signs, but they did the advanced scouting work, which is against the rule. Which side would you come down on this?
I'd come down on what you just said. You broke a rule, there has to be some kind of punishment. Mm-hmm. And then it just becomes a question, what's the right punishment? You know, you're not going to, are you going to dock them scholarships? Are you going to keep them from going? Someone had suggested you can't go to the championship game. You know, that didn't happen. They're going. So they decided, okay, well, the head coach is the head of the program, and so we're going to take it out on him. Yeah. You know, right or wrong, I don't know. I mean, they did do it, and they're not done. You know, the NCAA will come in with whatever they're going to come with. It might be the year 2030 by the time they get their report done. But they're not done, but they are done with the Big Ten portion of it. And, you know, as I say, ultimately, the kids shouldn't be held responsible for it. They didn't do it, and I'm glad that they at least have a chance to prove themselves on the field.
They do.
They don't get that taken.
And Harbaugh gets that chance in the playoffs. Yeah. And so the end question on this segment about Jim Harbaugh is, do you think, and you know him a long time, do you think he'll be there next year?
I'm not sure the NFL's in a hurry to take him either. You know, he's done that dance a few times. And even though, you know, the NFL doesn't care about sign stealing, you know, do they want the baggage that kind of comes with Jim? You know, that the baggage and, you know, got him out of San Francisco. You know, people remember his record, but they forget that, you know, he was successful in San Francisco and they got rid of him because he couldn't get along with certain players, or they got tired of his routine, you know. And that goes around in the NFL, and maybe they don't want to take a huge chance on him. Maybe there's one team, you know, like there was last year or the year before, there's one team that flirts with him. He's got a pretty good deal at Michigan. You know, he can stay there the way he's been coaching him now. He could stay there the rest of his life. I know his family. I know they like being in Ann Arbor. I know if he walks away from Michigan, he's never coming back. And I'm not sure that he wants to sever that. So I'd put it at, you know, 60-40 that he stays.
Okay. Mitch's book is called The Little Liar. I commend everything Mitch has ever written to all of you out there. And I deeply appreciate you being on. Thank you, Mitch.
It's a pleasure, Tony.
Mitch Albom, a good friend. We'll take a break. We will come back with me because, as I will explain to you, Michael Wilbon is under the weather today. And I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League Podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
In the brokenness. Once again, Tom Golley is singing for us. This is a song called I'm Letting Go. Michael, if independent musicians and artists like Tom Golley want to send in their songs, get them played here, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheiser.com.
And remember, you can listen to them in their entirety without us babbling at the end of the show.
And I shouldn't do this. I shouldn't disparage Tom because these are lovely songs and we're thrilled to play them. But when I hear his name, Tom Golley, all I think of is that song. I think it was the Stylistics, Betcha by Golly Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Was that song any good?
It was okay.
Okay.
It's okay. It's not a candidate. It's, you
okay,
know,
it's not on the list of
Brandy. No. It's fine.
All right.
It's fine. All right. So in this segment, we generally have Michael Wilbon. But he got ill overnight, sent us a note saying, it's a struggle, you know. And so we said, get better, you know, take a pass on this show. And we would have talked about the football over the weekend. And actually, we would have talked a lot more about the college and the pro. I will just say this, that of the pro football games yesterday, it was sort of a dull slate. But the Buffalo-Philadelphia game was a great game, just a great game. And I cannot...
They lose again in overtime.
Yeah, I cannot be more praising of Josh Allen and Jalen Hurts. I mean, they were great.
Yeah.
No, they were just great. Jalen Hurts is a leader, kids.
Yes.
He doesn't make mistakes. I mean, he got them. They're down three in OT, and he gets them into the end zone.
How about the field goal to get into overtime?
59 yards to get to overtime. That's luck.
The description that Romo had clearly is a golfer where you have, oh, he's playing the hard fade off the court or letting the wind drift it back to the center of the fairway.
Yeah.
Another game Houston missed a 58 where it hit the...
it hit the bar.
Yeah.
But that didn't have the consequences of this.
No, and it's pretty rare that you get a center getting that much attention with Kelce in terms of the penalties.
Twice.
And then, you know, the play that leads to the Hurts touchdown.
Yeah. I mean, it was really, really... a wonderful game to watch. Buffalo needed to win that game. They're
they
in trouble
had,
now.
They should have had the touchdown to...
Yeah. The receiver's open, and Allen throws it to the wrong side, or he moves to the wrong side. I have no idea what happened. But it was a greatly entertaining game. Philadelphia has now won. They've beaten Kansas City and Buffalo at home. Now, at home helps. But these are two very good teams, and they've now beaten them.
Two weather-affected games.
Yeah, and they have San Francisco... at Philadelphia next Sunday, which is must-watch TV.
Absolutely.
And how did Philadelphia get those three in a row at home? You know, they get them at home. So we'll see what happens with that. That was the best game on the board in the pros.
Does that loss keep the Bills out of the playoffs?
I think the Bills will lose their next game when they play. They're a bye this week, I think. Then they play at Kansas City. Then they have Dallas at home. If they lose those both, they're 6-8, and they're not getting in.
Yeah.
9-8's not getting in. So... you know, I went through some of the stuff today on the standings. Like, Philadelphia has scored 310 points. That's fourth or fifth highest in the league. Dallas has scored 347 and only given up 185. It's the biggest positive differential. But Dallas hasn't beaten a single team, not a single team with a winning record. Not a team. So I don't know what that counts for. San Francisco,
some of that's the division.
310 scored and 170 given up, plus 140. Miami scored a lot of points. Buffalo scored a lot of points. Baltimore is plus 140 almost. 324 scored and 187 given up. Kansas City's only given up 181 points in 11 games. San Francisco fewer than that, 170 in 11 games. And then you have terrible teams like the Giants. Scored 159. Carolina's terrible. 173 scored. The Jets, New England, both terrible. New England scored 148 points in 11 games.
That puts them
That's
at
the worst.
That is
That's the worst. Worst.
Yes.
That's the worst.
Yeah.
So awful. But anyway, let me get off the pros and let me get to college. Because there was just a barrage of great college games. Later in the day, you got to see Florida State save its season against Florida. You got to see Washington save its season against Washington State. These are traditional rivalry games. But the two games earlier in the day, starting with Ohio State, Michigan. I mean, that was a terrific game. Michigan, as you know, as Mitch said earlier, Michigan stared them down.
Yeah, they did.
Stared them down. And Ryan Day is an unsympathetic character. And I'm sure there are a lot of people at Ohio State who want to get rid of him, even though his record is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Except against
the top-ranked team. Like, he only loses to teams like the top, you know, five.
Right. So it is reasonable to conclude, can we win a championship with this guy if when we get into these games, he doesn't win them? I was happy. I did not think Michigan would win. I thought Ohio State would win. If you pay a head coach $10 million and he can't be there for the last three games and you win all three, why are you paying him $10 million? Would be one of my feelings. And that game would have been enough. But the Alabama-Auburn game was the best thing I saw in the weekend. Alabama-Auburn, the end of that game. It's Auburn has to win that game. Let me just go over this.
Well, it's not just what happened on the field. It was the video production, the way that they were doing images around the entire stadium and what that game was going to mean to those fans.
At the end of the game, Alabama's 31 yards away. They have to score a touchdown. They're 31 yards away, and this is their last chance. It's Flutie-like, but it's not really Flutie because it's not a heave into the end zone. It's not. It's a very controlled pass into the end zone by the Alabama kid. But as I watch that play develop, again, they're on the 31-yard line, and they must score a touchdown. What's the easiest way to stop a touchdown? Well, the easiest way to stop a touchdown is to force the quarterback out of the pocket and make him start to run, because then he can't throw anymore. Once he crosses the line of scrimmage, throwing is not available to him, and then he's got to go 31 yards. There is very, very little chance of that happening. There's very little chance of him making the pass he made, but there's less chance of him making that run because the other team's got 11 guys to go get him.
And you have a clock.
Right. Now, tell me why the defensive coordinator at Auburn has a three-man rush that does not rush at all. Not at all. They play contain. Don't play contain. Contain is stupid. Go get him. Force him to run. This is, to me, utterly fireable on the part of the defensive coordinator and maybe the head coach as well, if he approves this. Utterly fireable at Auburn. And then to your point, Michael, the pictures in the stands, the people are weeping. Oh, my God. They're just weeping.
Yeah.
Auburn should have won that game.
Yeah.
In no way Alabama wins. What did you think when you saw that?
I was just stunned. I always suspect that Alabama's going to find a way to win those. But then you think back to the one where the guy gets the missed field goal in the back of the
kick six. The kick six.
All the way back. So that game like has some legendary finishes. You can't just sit there and have three guys sort of, you know, play patty cake
That's
with the other
foot. That's all they're doing. They're not attempting to put any pressure on
you.
You go
put pressure on him. It's crazy. That happens every
single
time.
And it's before that needing the actual touchdown, not a field goal, to get the win. And it's the misplay on the snap.
The snap was terrible.
Running backwards.
And it cost him about 10 yards.
And then all of a sudden, when he makes the pass and it's caught, it's so quiet and you can't actually tell at first if it's a touchdown or not, because you're sitting there going, it easily would be batted down or not, but you're just, and then in hindsight you're like, how was there nobody that was in his face?
Yeah,
you're just sitting there hoping, like, well, there's, you know, we've already felt like we've won the game and it's likely going to be incomplete or get batted away.
Defense, which is where Gerard Phelan was.
Yep.
Behind the defense with Flutie.
Yeah.
The defense was right at the end line, and Phelan was a yard deep.
Where were you? I know your feet were in the end zone. Were you at the back of the end zone, or were you to one of the sides?
I was on one of the sides. I was on the left-hand side. The action was on the right-hand side. I was on the left-hand side about halfway back.
Okay, you didn't share that detail when you gave this recollection on PTI last week.
I did not.
My favorite PTI moment of the year.
I just said my feet were in the end zone.
Well, because I was watching that play, and you do see the right.
Me.
I was looking for you.
No, I'm not in the shot.
Yeah.
I'm not in the shot because it's in the – as you face the end zone from the field, that happens on the right-hand side, and I was on the left.
Didn't you say the Miami guy just fell to his
Carl
knees?
Carl Schmidt fell to his – because he just lost the game. He went down in a heap. Down in a heap, yeah. So, I mean, the Alabama – there's no way. There's no way. It's just really – all credit to Alabama.
Yeah.
But that shouldn't happen.
No.
Really shouldn't happen. Those were very, all those games were good. And then they went into the Washington game and then the Florida State game. And I still think Florida State, their season has been devalued by Louisville losing. They're going to play Louisville in the finals of the ACC championship. And Louisville is not going to be ranked anywhere near where Washington and Oregon are going to be ranked, you know, or anywhere near what Texas is going to, in my opinion, have a bigger claim. If Alabama beats Georgia, they're in.
Oh, yes.
They're in.
Yes.
And then Georgia. Texas beat them. Georgia should win.
Yeah.
But
who knows? Would Georgia be in as a one-loss team at that point?
Don't know. Yeah. I don't know because they're not a conference champion.
That's true.
Alabama beats them in the conference. I think conference championships mean something. I think that's why Ohio State, a one-loss team, but they're not going to play for the conference championship. So we will take a break and come back, email and jingle, yes?
That's right.
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Bruce Griffin, just love it. You want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad, please?
He's not the Elvis of the Greek Isles, but he's pretty good.
That's right.
He's pretty good. Bethesda Bagels, we love them. You will as well. We got the bagel sandwiches today, an extra one for Chessy, hopefully. All you need to do is go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you, then pop on in, and you will be thrilled.
To that point, Chessy is nowhere to be found.
Yes.
She's coming back today.
Very excited
coming
about
back
that.
In the
she
afternoon.
Knows what's waiting for her.
That's going to do it for us today. Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say, standing on a mountain looking down on a city, the way I feel is a doggone pity. Teardrops falling down a mountainside. Many times I've been here, many times I've cried. We used to be so happy when we were in love, high on a mountain of love. That's Johnny Rivers. Mountain of Love. And I believe Johnny Rivers, his real name may be something like Ramastella.
Johnny Ramastella, yes.
I love Johnny Rivers.
He's great.
I love Johnny Rivers. He's really? still singing, I think.
I believe he is still singing, yes.
Thanks to our guest today, Mitch Album. Don't forget about Mitch's new book, The Little Liar, which is available wherever you get your books. Thanks as well to today's sponsors. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple, please leave us a review. So what have we got here from Jason in Hartford, Connecticut? Well, I have enjoyed all of the airtime given to Tommy DeVito, the current New York Giants quarterback recently, including your acknowledgement last Monday that he still lives with his parents. I've been surprised there's been no mention that he also shares the name of Joe Pesci's character in Goodfellas. And, of course, the classic last line from Billy Batts, go get your shine box, Tommy. And that was issued to Michael Imperioli, I believe. I believe that in the movie, that character, Tommy, is from the guy from
Sopranos?
Sopranos, Michael Imperioli. Am I wrong on that? I could be wrong.
Well, Michael Imperioli is in that. He gets shot by Tommy at one point.
Okay, so I have that wrong.
Yeah.
I have that wrong. But he's in the movie.
He's in the movie,
from
yes.
From Andrew Emch, E-M-C-H, in Archbold, Ohio. I've listened to you and Mike since undergrad in Columbus over 20 years ago. Eat it, Michigan. Well, you're going to have to eat it. Now the woman to whom I'm related by marriage and I are regular podcast listeners, although she prefers stories of Michael's kids. Over the years, you and Michael have relayed many heartwarming, funny, and entertaining stories, but none have delivered me so much pleasure as Wilbon's fangirl story with Travolta. Are you kidding me? The guy carries Steph Curry and Michael Jeffrey Jordan's numbers in his phone, and yet when he faces off with Danny Zuko, he might as well be me. Michael Wilbon, the everyman, well, plus a couple of houses. Anyway, thanks for the years of stories that entertain and keep us connected, even those that keep you humble.
Now, what resonated with you about the commercial?
That's a great question from John.
From Jim Lennon, not John Lennon. Not that John Lennon, obviously. I'm thoroughly disappointed that your guest today, and it's referring back to Jason Lockenfora, had a hiccup and you didn't call him out on it. First it was sneezing, then hiccups. I imagine armpit farts within the next few episodes. Hope this email makes it from Swan Point, Maryland, to your humble abode. Happy Thanksgiving. Jimmy, the UPS guy. Thank you, Jimmy. From Bruce Isn't there a restaurant in Palm Beach that Tony talks about? If I'm not dreaming, can you tell me the name of it?
The Fish Restaurant.
Where we went with Alan.
I'll look it up.
Yeah, okay. From Carla Corrado in Columbus, Ohio. The worst pop song is Brandy, You're a Fine Girl by Looking Glass. That's it. That's pretty
talking
much
talking about the
is.
Reef Grill, Dad?
Hmm?
The Reef?
Oh, the Reef Grill. That's up by Seminole. Yeah, that's the best fish restaurant in the world, the Reef Grill. You're right. Brian Deaton, Lexington, Kentucky. Chessie's recent behavior is indeed concerning, as these behaviors tend to escalate. I would know as the father of three young adults. I recommend that you start marking the levels on all your liquor bottles and start hiding the car keys. Jonathan Schwartz, Tulsa, Oklahoma. Chessie changing her behavior by raiding the countertops for food at 9 years old isn't that troubling, especially compared to Roy Horn of Siegfried and Roy and 7-year-old Manticore. That's a behavior change to be worried about. I'm not going into that. From Chris Van Sells, emails us a lot, Forest Hill, Maryland. I can't offer anything on Chessie's eating habits other than sympathy. Last week, my middle two teenagers were the last ones to leave the house. Not only did they not lock up the dogs, but they also left the pantry wide open. So it didn't take long for the dogs, Tyson, a 120-pound Rottweiler, and Otis, 40 pounds boxer mutt, to realize their windfall. They cleaned out everything on the lower shelves, brownies, cookies, oatmeal pies, dry ramen noodles, and for some reason, a whole box of baking soda. Their stomachs were so upset that night that the gurgling woke me up from a dead sleep, and they threw up all manner of wrappers the entire next day. Several days later, Tyson is still sentenced to a rice diet because he was 100% the mastermind. Like Chessie, he's also 9 years old. You can't teach old dogs new tricks, indeed. From John Agliata in St. Louis, Missouri, who says, P.S., I'll say hi to the arch for you, which I appreciate. Hearing of Chessie's recent dining experiences with food on your kitchen counter brought back some memories. Back when the woman to whom I'm related by marriage and I were in our early years of wedded bliss, we had a dog called Memphis, named after the city of the Commercial Appeal newspaper where I interned while I was in college. One night I came home from my copy editing job at the Battle Creek Inquirer to find a bunch of shards that looked to be plastic all over the floor. There stood Memphis, looking at me guiltily. It was then that I remembered what had come in the mail the day before I left for work and what was missing from the kitchen table where I'd left it, a 6-month supply of my wife's birth control pill.
Maybe keep it was in mind, Memphis.
The paper ran on the presses at midnight, so this is about 12:30 a.m. I finally found an emergency vet who would answer the phone. These were pre-internet times. He told me to give the dog a capful of hydrogen peroxide to induce vomiting. Yes, absolutely. I spent the next hour wandering around the apartment complex grounds in the freezing Michigan winter while Memphis barfed up 6 months of birth control pills. Thankfully, Memphis was fine after that. Even more thankfully, the woman to whom I'm related by marriage did not give birth to our first child, a masculine child, until a few years later. Mark in Syracuse. The first week I moved into the woman to whom I'm now related by marriage's house, I made us an appetizing salmon and rice dinner. Put mine down on the table, went back to the kitchen, only to come back, see my salmon missing and the rice remaining. I wasn't sure what had happened, only to look over the couch at her dog staring at me, her eyes and smirk saying, "You're number 3 in this house, pal. Don't mess with me." Grateful for all the hours of entertainment. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. From Ed Butt, who we love. Episode 51. I don't think we have to go into that. Let me see. Chessie is 9, which in human years makes her about the same age as we are. I don't know about you, but I've pretty much gotten to the age where if I want to, I'll do it. Consequences be damned. What are they going to do? Sentence me to life? It's funny. Frank Kelly, Scituate, Massachusetts. I almost fell off the treadmill at the Y when I heard Carville take BC getting 8.5. I'm sitting in section QQ of Alumni Stadium, 35-yard line, with fellow little Louis DeGusto at halftime. And the U leads Eagles 28-7. I only wish James was here so we could join our post-game tailgate that should start at the end of the third. At least Reginald didn't pick BC. He says, I passed on a golf tournament for this game. Carville got beat. Carville was 2-4 or something like that.
Yeah.
Richard Morrell. I keep waiting for a little to validate my conviction, but they haven't come through, so I'm compelled to write and set the record straight. The worst song ever, and this one topped both the pop and country charts, is Honey by Bobby Goldsboro. It's dreadful.
Is it? I'm not familiar with that.
But Honey, I miss you, and I'm doing good, and I'd love to be with you if only I could. She dies. It's just terrible. A wave of nausea just overwhelmed me as I typed this out. None of the other nominations elicit such a reaction at the mention of their titles. Tell me you feel it too. I do. And I sort of liked Bobby Goldsboro, but I would say that was unforgivable. What is this? It's pictures of, you can save $5. Another sign that a football team is in trouble, from Joe Anderson in Alexandria, Virginia. I guess this is a Washington. Is that Terry McLaurin?
Yeah, that's the McLaurin Crunch, I think it's called. Oh, yeah. Crunch Time, yes.
99 cents, save $5. Trade them. Right.
You bought it high, Nige.
From Jeff McAleer in Springfield, Virginia. Crypto. My bathroom currently contains the same Orgel natural fruity bubble that Elliot Olshansky's second masculine child is hooked on. It also contains Orgel Kids Natural Berry Blast, Tom's of Maine Silly Strawberry, and Act Kids Bubblegum Blowout. We have all of these options because my masculine child requires options to choose from every night. Yep. He doesn't actually choose different things, of course. He chooses bubblegum every night. But God forbid all four options aren't available to choose from, or hell will break loose. Experienced parents will be familiar with my decision to just accept this. Sure, kid, we can take four tubes of toothpaste on vacation. It seems to give him great joy. Once you get your Crest Original Tartar Control, you might consider keeping the other junk around just so you can choose not to use it two times a day.
Yep, no gentle parroting there. This is still better than brushing the teeth of the captain, who every third night decides to bite you.
Well, there you go. Mike Stinafort, freelance meteorologist. WTOP, I know
yes,
that name.
We know Mike.
On Wednesday's show, you mentioned that Alice's Restaurant was Arlo Guthrie's only hit. Actually, Guthrie's only top 40 hit was City of New Orleans. 100% right. You're right. Which was released in 1972. Alice's Restaurant, which is actually Alice's Restaurant Massacre.
That's right.
Received a lot of airplay, especially on album rock stations, but at over 18 minutes was way too long to become a hit in the tight formats of AM radio in the late 60s. Not trying to usurp Kevin Sheehan, but I would love to be the official freelance radio meteorologist of the show. If not already taken, it's yours. Thanks for the laughs and entertainment as on my lovely bride.
We
and
do
I
weather on the 8th.
DC to our mountain home west of Front
on
Royal.
The 7th. Let's beat TOP.
Front Royal, that's a long way out.
That is a bit of a drive, yes.
That's a long
way I've reached
way
the point in my life where I started playing TOP in the house. Just runs in the kitchen.
Oh, you're there.
That's very lovely. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
I'm going to solve.
No, you're not. You're an idiot.
Corno Curl Cabinet.
No.
I'm so worn out. How I've been living. I've been ungrateful, distasteful, and shameful. I'm so fed up with choices I've been making. It's time to get up and go out and change it. I'm gonna walk the walk. Not just talk the talk. I'm making changes. I'm making moves. I'm gonna walk the walk. Not just talk the talk. I'm making changes. I'm making moves. I'm making moves. 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 I'm making moves. There ain't going till the battle's won. This is it. I'm never gonna quit. No, can't stop. Gotta keep moving on. Won't stop. Going till the battle's won. This is it. I'm never gonna quit. Far away through all the mess, try to keep control for one more day. Stumbling through the dark, holding on so tight to what I want for my own life. But I'm just so tired of the way things have been. I've been knocked down, I've been counted out.
I've been frozen in fear, heart filled with doubt. I made my mistakes, and all I know is I'm not giving up, I'm letting go. Was never mine. Through everything, you cleared a way to make it right. You give me purpose and you take me as I am. Do what you want with my life. Oh, 'cause I'm just so tired of the way things have been. I've been knocked down, I've been counted out, I've been frozen in fear, heart filled with doubt. I made my mistakes, and all I know is I'm not giving up, I'm letting go.